This is East End Inc. Tonight we present poets Tom Thompson and Carol Stone, as recorded in July of 2019 at the East Hampton Poetry Marathon. The venue was the East Hampton Historical Society's Mulford Farm. And here's the Poetry Marathon producer, Dee Slavut.
So Tom Thompson is the author of Live Feed and The Pitch and Passenger, three books that he has published. He has degrees from Dartmouth College, University of Sussex, UK, and the University of Iowa. His poems, essays, and reviews have appeared widely. A longtime advertising executive, he currently works at St. Martin's Press and lives in New York City with his family. He has two sons. Please let's ask the real McCoy, Tom Thompson, to come and share his poetry with us. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Dee. Thank you for that wonderful introduction and for the invitation to this beautiful, beautiful space. It's funny, my job at St. Martin's Press, one description of it might be something like, tell people what books are about. Describe a book to a person so they might know if they want to read it. But when people ask me what my book's about, I get very reticent. And it's very difficult for me to talk about what the book's about. So I hope I'm going to be a little bit of help, but I'm not sure how much help, because it's the poems for me are very working lyrically around a circumstance or a problem or maybe even a kind of language. But I will tell you something about the poems in this book, and that they're really clustered around three inciting incidents, maybe. One is when my son was diagnosed with absence epilepsy. Another is when my older brother, who was the most athletic and vigorous among us, had a stroke at 52. It was a real shock. And the third, there was a year when several people, including my sister-in-law, died, and who I was very close to. So those encounters with the body and the spirit and consciousness are resonant throughout these poems. This first poem in particular, when my brother was in ICU, he was in ICU for over a month. It was a very serious stroke. And he would come, the thing is, when you're in ICU, you would be unconscious in this deep, dark, but the most private space you could possibly be in. And then he would emerge from into consciousness. But where are you? You're suddenly in this very, very public space, bright. There are lights. There are people you don't know. You don't quite know where you are. Suddenly, you've gone from the most private space imaginable to the most public space. And I was trying to imagine what that might be like. There's a line in this poem from St. Teresa of Avila. So this, she's a person who was seized by God. And whether it was an actual seizure or she was seized by God, I don't know. But she, when she talked of it, she said, I could not wish to be rid of it. So she did not choose the ecstatic moment. The ecstatic moment seized her, the body in the bed. First, there were whispers. Then a fizzing behind my eyes, a tongue of light, a fit of flame, a spidering sound like rain smattering a tarp, or a lit cigarette doused in a sink. There was a pointed series of breaths when I came to, and shaking. I was shaking, disquiet. I was possessed. No, I was shot through with garnet, like molasses, slow, like meat. I could not wish to be rid of it. There were rubber socks and quarter-inch bands that dictated blood flow until I became a pillar of hellfire, torqued about by a gown of love. I was waking, and static and swaddled in sweat. Adoration was my trainer, and I was its flunky. Either way, there was work to be done, and I was the one having it done to me. This next poem is interictal, which I usually have to describe what that word is, but you've already done, which is fantastic. So it's the moment between seizures. We often think about the seizure as the moment you focus on, but in cases like my son's, when the seizures were quite frequent, you really do pay attention to the space between the seizures too. In a way, there's also for my son an absence fit. One of the things about them is that they're hard to tell. They're not like a grand mal seizure. You stop, and then you emerge. So it took us a while to understand that he had epilepsy. We just thought he was kind of a spacey kid, but he had epilepsy. That phrase that you quoted, a disturbance of the animal functions of the soul, is actually a definition of the word disorder, as in medical disorder, that I found in one of my favorite dictionaries, a 19th century version of the Webster's Dictionary. Interictal. First, the smell of burnt wire. Then eggy sweat. You come to, and it's Episcopalian canticles rising up the air shaft. It's Sunday. There's the scent of fish tacos. Small dogs press their lips to living room glass. Light shivers like a cell. Some call this a disturbance of the animal functions of the soul. You know it as fatigue. How time sometimes gets out in front of you. Once they'd have shouted holy, holy at your head, or drowned you for a witch. It's hard to breathe. Ethereal prick you'd call out if your mouth could move. This material substance rings with it, what you can't say. Earth floats in the window pane, a pendulous fruit that's consumed its tree. Is it the oxygen blend streaming through your head like a helmet? Or is it just you riding empty swells for 5 or 15 seconds until the bell of everything else goes under the sea green? So one of the things I'm thinking about is the way epilepsy in other cultures and in other times was often seen as somebody who might have a connection with the gods. They might be seized by God. Now, of course, we medicalize it, and thank goodness, that's a good thing. But I'm interested in that connection between this event and the spirit. This next poem, the surgeons I've met in medical capacities have all been incredible people, super capable, very confident. I met in a different context a surgeon in a meditation group. And so I got to know him outside of the hospital just as a guy. And he was a very interesting, tender, self-questioning person. And it surprised me that he was a surgeon and an accomplished surgeon. This is thinking about him and about the different spaces in a hospital. Surgeon, you're patient, but rattled. Vertical in your swimming pool blue clothes. The body under your thumb is rim to rim, one shallow piece of skin. An alien, quivering tambourine, you slip your hand inside. Out in the family courtyard we drift, dull as bees in heavy oxygen. The air between us, an open, riotous sea. A chime could cross it, this chasm between us. It fills with the ring sometimes of a climber's shiny dropped instrument. There's another poem about emerging into consciousness. The orderlies. One white figure stands at the screen, gathers others. They cluster around my machine, as gulls cluster and gather at a cliff. Who says I exist? Ice stumbles, falls in the icebox down the hall. Locks rattle, visiting room doors. I hear them all. I don't move. Not even for flies, those precise delegates that will not let my blood be. Strike that, one says. So what, the other? Fuck you, a laugh, for drinks. Light draws the eye to boxes, piled on boxes, little refineries of memory that blink on and off, analyzing my protein counts in lemon and lime, articulating this human matter as chemical shift. Pure information. No story. No communicable word. The room's pristine architecture is openly violated by their laughter. Whose violation? Who's the stranger here? Am I the rigorous prototype? On what planet are we bathed in bacterial light? This next poem is called Breath on the Mirror, and a breath on the mirror, of course, is a test for whether you're living, right? See, is there breath? We believe that time has no color, no odor, and that respiration occurs without color or odor. Still, we observe the event as a luster on skin, a familiar off-plum scent. The infection grows rampant, feeds on itself in this compromised respiratory tract. It takes the name of our nature. It makes arrangements. Together, we record the dilation of pupils, register the alteration of oral bacterial flora. The agent needs oxygen if it's to breathe as we do. We're coating our mirrors with glue. When you live in Manhattan, you have this sort of fantasy that if you could just go to a quiet place, you might get a good night's sleep. And then you go to a quiet place like East Hampton, or we had a house upstate for a while. And of course, you hear the bugs, the wind, you know, the window rattles. All of a sudden, the house creaks. You know, you hear all the other noises. So this is something like Ode to a Bad Night's Sleep. And it's called Turning as a Kind of Shouting. Is it total night or absolute morning? The bed, a ragged, tumbling thing. You're just trying to keep still in it. Cicadas nuzzle each other in the trench out back. This is what you said you wanted. It's dead quiet. And yet, the window rattles its tracks, rattles birds who mistake it for air. There's a smudge on the glass you take for a ghost, a dream you can't shake enough to exit. One truck chugs opalescent exhaust in through the window. It makes a mineral cloud that seeds a fern in your lungs, cracks open the eyes to a speckled dark where you wake, humid now, as it is inside the hold of a ship. This is a poem thinking about, you know, those clumps of seaweed that you see in the water, and they have this an incredible density to them, a kind of a sublime density to them. This is thinking about that. It's a body, face down in swells, floating and dragging in time. Rust-red organisms cleave to it. It is a silent climate, floor to some and ceiling to others, both dense and luxe. It's breathing, just breathing. This dark forest in salt fluid emits a continuous low-pitch crinkling of concern, such as adults emit as they adjust their not-yets and nocturnal whispers to children to hush. All we have are the starched psychic instruments of our good clothes. What else can we do with these near-human amplitudes that pulse the bay? There is an echo in our voice, and in our air, and in our water, and in our earth, and you at the mouth, strange species. The sea is animal, vegetable, and mineral. It seizes and holds us fast where the eyes go.
This is East End Inc. We heard poet Tom Thompson, recorded July 2019 at the East Hampton Poetry Marathon. Next up, poet Carol Stone, as introduced by the Poetry Marathon producer, Dees LaVouten.
Distinguished professor of English and creative writing, Emerita, Montclair State University, Carol Stone's poetry includes, her collections include Hurt the Shadow, Dos Madres Press, American Rhapsody, Cabin Carry Press, Traveling with the Dead, Backwaters Press, and All We Have Is Our Voice, Dos Madres Press. Her work has been nominated for the Pushcart Prize. She has received 3 fellowships from the New Jersey State Council on the Arts. Her poems have appeared most recently in Blue Fifth Review, Chet, A Journal of Medicine, Pen and Brush, The Bellevue Literary Review. She divides her time between Springs, Lucky Us, in East Hampton, and Verona, New Jersey.
This book is called American Rhapsody, and it's largely about Prohibition, the death of my parents at that time, and the racketeering father, who I didn't know very much about, and I guess you'll get some of that as I read the poems. By the light of the silvery moon, the Chickering piano, the best that rum-running money could buy, carved legs, hand-painted roses on a yellow background, half covered by a flower-fringed shawl, my father bought so my mother could pass the evenings alone. War over, stock market up, in a speakeasy, high rollers hoisted glasses of single malt, $10 a shot, a month's rent, making whoopee. Piano that holds the photograph of my parents sitting close, that no one plays, that I sat beneath. I want to spoon, learning to tie my shoelaces, listening to the grown-ups who never spoke my father's name. The stranger in the photo of my parents. You look happy, your glasses full. Why are you there between my parents and Sloppy Joe's bar in Havana? My father's associate, partner in rum running, an IRS man tracking cash that went to Batista, a member of a rival clan, making sure you got your cut, just a salesman on vacation at Cuba's Varadero Beach. I snipped you out of my copy. I don't know your name. Your secrets are buried in Havana, in a bar, in Cuba, mi amor. Incantation. And the epigraph is by, actually, he's a very famous Hungarian poet, but we don't know who he is because we don't read too many European poets. His name is Resto Sarres. Little white flowers will never awaken you. Sometimes I feel I could speak a lost language, the way as a girl in department stores, I would trail 2 chatting women through lingerie, eavesdropping on their Hungarian, as if those sounds, dimly remembered like an incantation, would make my mother appear. And sometimes syllables bubble from my weeping mouth like water, making first helpless utterances that call forth a mother's love. Home ceremonies. Overnight, forsythia by the roadside, by the hillside, beneath the underpass, Bach on the radio, nisht, nisht, hazu, hazu, rattles rooftops. Betrayal in the garden. How quickly the yellow will vanish, as if it had never come. Who are we when we speak the bone, when we dig in the sky? Who are we when we bow to nothing, No, not anyone. Yet moon hanging and oh, stars. What she wants is to wade knee-deep in tenderness, to swim in that river, her dearest ones holding her. She gathers yellow flowers for the ceremony, which could be emptiness, which could be wholeness. So that is American Rhapsody. All we have is our voice, is in the voice of other people, and I've tried to project myself into them. And the first one I'm going to read is called Widow, and it's about Gustav Mahler's wife. Do you know who Gustav Mahler's wife was? Well, you don't have to know, but maybe you'll know when I finish reading the poem. She only married famous men. That was her thing. Widow, Gustav Mahler. In Vienna, where the coffee houses mixed schlag with hate, Gustav let himself be baptized to be conductor of the court opera. He would have time to compose, time to take café 40 years before people would be dragged away. When we married, he made me give up performing my music. Walter Gropius. Walter built beautiful buildings. My gift to him was our two children. What is Bauhaus architecture compared to their lives? He never forgave me for going back to Gustav's bed when he lay dying. Franz Werfel. Franz, with whom I fled Europe for America, will always be remembered for Song of Bernadette. I inspired his words on the page. Years younger than me, he was my last genius. Tonight at the Hollywood Bowl, a flute begins its tremolo. Kettle drums bang like the tread of leather. The conductor lifts his baton like an officer's saber. Gustav's leader on my lips, I, Alma Mahler, Gropius, Werfel, famous widow, sit in the first row. This is Dylan Thomas's wife, Caitlin, who stayed back there in Wales while he was giving all of these readings on campus, drinking and making merry with the ladies. And the epigraph is, in fact, by Dylan Thomas. The oat was merry in the wind. I rush along Hudson Street to the White Horse Tavern, a wife who jostles strangers at the bar to be near her husband, who is ordering Macallan Scotch in a voice deep as a cathedral's bell. Women surround him, as they do after his readings. Dylan, fame burst over you. I want you back in Swansea. I miss our pillow talk. Poetry's no substitute for love. Kafka's Final Hours. In the text of the poem, you will be hearing quotes from Kafka's story, The Country Doctor. All my life, I craved art. With every woman, I hesitated. Dying, I found my great love. The country doctor's horses turned their big heads north, hauling his carriage all the starry night. Father, in my letter, I accuse you of leaving my stories unread. A life stuffed into his black bag, sentenced to ride forever, the physician cracked. Like Gregor Samsa, turned into a cockroach, creeping close to the border, playing his violin. In these final hours, each time I spit up bright blood, his leather whip shouted, faster, faster, to his two exhausted brown mares. I hear the winds calling me. A false alarm on the night bell once answered, it cannot be made good, not ever. I think with my stories, I'll outwit death. And of course, he died of tuberculosis at a young age. Irina Rashtuskina in prison. With a matchstick, I scratch my poems on soap, memorize them, wash them away, stand at attention in a cold cell, address a uniformed woman as citizen superintendent. All night, I listen to women prisoners cry, Mama, remember the telegram ordering my arrest. You will dream of me, Russia. One day my poems will flow from my mouth like tea from the samovar. Marc Chagall's I and the Village, 1911. That is an ekphrastic poem, just to... My father, flail on his shoulder, walks uphill toward my mother. Her hands outstretched, she dances up and down. A woman inside a cow milks it. I add a blue sky and a goose down cloud. Then a church, cross on top, its organ silent as my prayers. And a necklace around the neck of a big green face. His fingernailed hand holds a grape cluster, as if I could hold back the annihilation to come. With my painting, I keep Vibetsk in my heart. And of course, that's the village he came from in Russia that he never forgot about and was always painting in. I am going to read the ones, a few, based on Joe Hopper's. Campground in the Battle of Washington Square, 1947. Hearth in the middle, my teapot and plates. I know what you're thinking. Feminine, fussy. No wonder, Ed's the great artist. Look again. You see a life. I almost said wife. Needing a touch of sentiment. He thinks I could only do flowers. I'll give him flowers, gentians, poppies. I fill my studio with them.
This is East End Inc. We heard poets Tom Thompson and Carol Stone as recorded at the 2019 East Hampton Poetry Marathon. They were introduced by Poetry Marathon producer Dee Slavutin. Tom Thompson's work includes Live Feed in 2002 and The Pitch, 2006, both from Alice James Books, and Passenger in 2018 from Four Way Books. Now, Carol Stone's work includes American Rhapsody, published by Cave & Carry Press, and Hurt, The Shadow, and All We Have Is Our Voice, from Dos Madres Press. The East Hampton Poetry Marathon resumes via Zoom at the East Hampton Public Library at 6 p.m. on August 2nd and again on August 9th. Registration is required. Information is at easthamptonlibrary.org/calendar. East End Inc. is heard on the 4th and occasional 5th Wednesday each month. Programs are archived at eastendinc.blogspot.com. And podcasts are available at soundcloud.com. Simply search for East End Inc. Today's program was produced by Tony Ernst with the aid of Dee Slavutin.